A note to listeners before we begin. Today's story includes language that may be offensive to non-neurotypical individuals. This is for the purpose of historical accuracy and does not reflect mine, the cast, or the crew's opinions. Listener discretion is advised. Summer may long be over, but I can't help but think about the state fair. Being from Ohio, you'd think my family would have gone every single summer. But nope. I didn't go to the fair for the first time until I was in third grade. That first time was phenomenal for me. I wasn't entered in any contests, nor did I really go on any rides. You know, looking back now, I can safely say that my first time at the fair was done wrong. Still, like we talked about in the Rocky Point Amusement Park episode, I loved seeing the twinkling lights come on in the evenings. Add in the aromas of deep-fried everything and cute little animals, and Skylar was hooked. My boyfriend has never been to the fair, and it astounded him when I talked about how everyone goes to see the Butter Cow, which is literally a cow sculpture made of more than 2,000 pounds of butter. How Ohio is that? The other memorable time at the fair for me was around my junior, maybe senior year of high school, when I went with three lovely lady friends from work. This time around, we did the damn thing right. Deep-fried Oreos? Check. Admiring the prize-winning pig? Check. Roller coasters? Checkity-check. Mechanical bull ride? Check times four. I don't really remember what the deep-fried Oreo tasted like, but at the time, my taste buds and arteries were more than satisfied. The piggies were super adorable, and I learned that day that there is no such thing as a teacup pig. The roller coaster made me question how on earth employees construct these rides within hours and whether or not they're truly safe. Finally, the mechanical bull. My friends did great on it, mostly because the horny guy running the thing shook it gently enough to, well, get them to shake, if you know what I'm saying. And when I got on, he made it a wild ride because he didn't care for my shimmying show. I think I lasted 15 seconds, if I'm being super generous. I never did the fair again after that. We do have a fair here in Los Angeles, but not once have I ever gone, because it simply wouldn't do my childhood fair justice. In my mind, everything would be overpriced and serve solely as Instagram opportunities, and quite frankly, I'm just not into that. The Ohio State Fair will live on in my memory, and maybe one day I'll travel home for it again. Probably not, but you never know. Today's story will briefly take me back to the Ohio Fairgrounds, but in a time long before I was born. Welcome to the Original Dead Time Stories, a podcast where I, Skylar Fastenow, go beyond the crime to investigate human psychology and history, so maybe we don't make the same mistakes of our ancestors. If you're a fan of the show and you want to support us even more, check out patreon.com/OGDeadTime. We'll begin our next story after this short break. Welcome back to our show. It's August 23rd, 1975, and some neighborhood hooligans are playing with firecrackers outside the home of Henry and Pam Newell.
Fucking kids drive me fucking crazy.
I thought I told you little shits to set your own home on fire. Jeez, fuck, crap!
Junior? Why don't you take a break from hooting and hollering and come with us to Woolco's? Mary wants to look at puppies, and Bobby wants to go for a walk through the woods.
Fine, fine. Kids?
We're right here, Junior.
Oh. Get your shoes on and come on!
Around a quarter to two, Henry parked the family car at Graceland Shopping Center.
All right, let's go. Mary, grab your brother's hand. We'll walk down to the forest path across the way, and then we'll look at them puppies.
Junior, I can't get over this guardrail.
Jump it. You're the one wanting to take this hike. What the hell is that?
That man's beating the daylights out of something.
Hey, you!
A scraggly man looked up for a split second, then sprinted away once he saw the family.
Damn, he was hitting that little girl.
Stay here, kids.
Shit. That whole girl's face is smashed in.
Go get that man, Junior!
Hang on. She's got blood bubbling from her nose. She's trying to fight to stay alive. Come on, honey, come on!
No, Junior, she's dead. There ain't a pulse in her wrist.
Fuck. Here. Cover her face with my shirt so the kids don't see. We'll call the police for Wilkos. And that's when we called you, officers.
Detective Robert Litzinger nodded as he finished writing notes.
And this man you saw with the little girl, Christy Newell, what did he look like?
I'd say he was in his late teens or early 20s. About 6 foot, 150 pounds. Long black hair, real scraggly face.
Clothes?
No shirt and cut-off jeans.
Copy. We'll make a sketch, and if we find the guy, you and the wife could ID him in a lineup?
Sure can.
Thank you for your help, Mr. Newell.
Three days went by, and every officer with the Columbus Police Department was made aware of their suspect. With the Ohio State Fair going on nearby, everyone was on high alert. Thomas Stroud was patrolling near a Greyhound bus station on foot when he noticed a man matching the police sketch.
Excuse me, son.
Hi.
Hi. You've heard about that Christy Mullins girl, right?
Sure.
Can you come with me? I have some fellas who want to talk with you.
Okay.
Hello, I'm Detective Ron Price. What's your name?
Jack Kerman.
You don't mind talking to me, do you, Jack?
I don't mind.
Good, good. Now I'm going to start this tape recorder. And while I do that, can you sign this waiver of your rights?
Sure.
All right. Now about Christy Mullins. Did you see her that day?
Uh-huh.
You did? On a guardrail by Graceland?
Yep.
Did you take her into the woods? You're not embarrassed telling me this, are you, Jack? Because I'm not embarrassed, if you're not.
I grabbed her by the wrist and took her into the woods.
Okay, and then what?
I hit her with my fist.
And then?
I took her Levi's off. Then I took her bra off.
I see. Did you rape her?
Yeah. I fucked her. She said she was gonna run. Said she was gonna tell her mama.
So you grabbed a board and beat her. Sorry, I don't want to put words in your mouth.
Yeah, I beat her.
Are you sure everything you said is true?
Yeah.
Do you believe in God? What's God do to someone who kills someone?
He puts you in the electric chair.
Calm down. We'll get you a lawyer, but until then, you'll be sleeping in a cell.
I don't want to go to the electric chair.
Stop that boo-hooing. I need you to sign another form acknowledging you're waiving your rights. Here.
The following day in the municipal court, Jack pleaded not guilty. Thus, a hearing was scheduled for September 3rd.
Got a new client for you, Mr. Schwartz.
I'm busy this week, Shirley.
The Division of Mental Retardation asked for you specifically, sir.
Attorney Myron Schwartz looked up from his paperwork.
What are we dealing with?
He's waiting for you down at the station. Apparently, he's got the mind of a kid between 9 and 13. Confessed to murdering Christy Mullins.
God, it's like they want me to lose. All right. Cancel my afternoon meeting. I'll go meet this kid.
There's our Jackie.
Jeez, he looks lost. Does he even know we're here?
Yeah, he stares in space like that a lot, but he'll warm up to you.
Hi, Jack. I'm your attorney. I hear you killed a girl.
Uh-huh.
I'll be quick about this because you ain't gonna understand it. You got frisky with a little girl, she threatened to tell her mama, and you bashed her in the head with a board, right?
Uh-huh.
Great. We'll skip this preliminary shit and go straight to a grand jury. I might be able to get you life instead of the electric chair.
I don't wanna go to the electric chair.
Ugh, I said you won't, Fry. Jeez, a little.
In the early days of September 1975, Myron met with the prosecuting attorney, Ron O'Brien, in court.
Thanks for meeting with me, Mr. O'Brien. I don't doubt Jack murdered that girl. He confessed and the Newells chose him from a lineup. Let's make this easy on both of us. My client pleads guilty on the condition you lower the charges from rape, kidnapping, and 3 counts of murder to aggravated murder. Death is off the table and replaced with life. Deal?
All rise.
Be seated.
Your Honor, I would like a word, please.
Myron watched with intensity as Ron whispered to the judge.
Gentlemen, the grand jury charges Jack Carmen with aggravated murder. How do you plead?
My client pleads guilty, Your Honor.
Jack Carmen, you have hereby been sentenced to life in prison.
All rise!
Just 11 days after the murder of Christy Mullins, a man was being placed behind bars. A man with the mental capacity of a child. A man the community didn't think was capable of murder. Petitions circulated demanding that the case be re-examined. And surprisingly, the loudest demands were coming from Norman and Phyllis Mullins, Christy's parents. Pressure mounted until the police decided to hold a conference about their investigation at the Sharon Township Hall, where over 70 concerned citizens showed up.
This man couldn't have killed my little girl on his own. You need to find out who he was working with, or I'll sue you.
Please, Mr. Mullins, shouting won't get us anywhere. We understand the community is outraged, but you need to understand, Mr. Carmen admitted that he alone committed the crime.
Then show us the darn transcripts.
Yes! Yes.
With the meeting going nowhere, the town created the Justice for Jack Committee with the goal of finding out who either helped Jack kill Christy or who was framing him. Meanwhile, at Ohio State University,
this guy is innocent, and the police are fucking ignoring the facts.
Seniors James Yavorchik and Rick Kelly were hard at work becoming the next Woodward and Bernstein.
What's up, James?
I interviewed the folks at the Volunteers of America where Jack was living, right? They said he didn't drive, so he had to take a bus to Graceland. VOA employees were getting their paychecks around 1:30 the day Christy died, and several of them say they saw Jack within the hour of getting their paycheck. The Newells said they saw the murder around 2:15, which means Jack would need to be on a bus by 1:30.
The bus driver I interviewed said the trip takes 35 minutes.
Yes! And from the High Street stop, it would take about 5 to 10 minutes to walk to Graceland. So, being generous with time, Jack raped and killed Christy in 5 minutes? I have the whole story right here. Who did kill Christy Mullins?
Too bad college students can't change shit, huh? Our story's great. We show pigs can't do their job.
But perhaps a few college students can make a big difference. Columbus Monthly found out about their article and picked it up as their cover story. On December 29th, 1975, the journal hit newsstands and set the stage for a wild 1976. Stick with us after the break for a crazy trial. Welcome back to our show. Right now, we're in the home of 16-year-old Carol Reeves on the day Christy was murdered.
Hello?
Hey, baby, I'm glad I got a hold of you.
I said to stop calling. This is like the fifth time this week.
That might be, kitten, but listen to this deal. Graceland is having a cheerleader competition today at 1:45. Bring your girlfriends because the winner gets free tickets to the fair.
That's pretty groovy. I'll go.
Love to hear that. You know the wooded area next to the mall?
Sure do.
Great. Make sure to wait over there, because that's where the competition is. Good luck.
Mom, I'm going out. Christy, perfect timing. I just spoke with that radio DJ. He says there's a contest at Graceland, and we can win tickets to the fair.
Gee, Carol, I don't know. I'm not very good at cheerleading.
Oh, come on, it'll be fun. I'll race you.
Carol, are you sure the contest was today? We've been waiting forever.
That's what the man said. I'll go into Wilco's and ask for the time. Wait here on this guardrail.
And when you came back?
And when I came back, Christy was gone, but her shoes were still there. I waited like 5 minutes, then walked into the woods to see if she was there. I sat by the creek for 15 minutes, and when she didn't show, I left. I didn't hear she died till that night.
The prosecution rests, Your Honor.
It was now Tuesday, December 13th, 1977, and Courtroom 9B was relatively quiet on the second day of Jack Carmen's retrial. After a friend helped him write a letter to fire Myron, Jack was given two cocky but smart lawyers by the names of Tom Tyack and Davey Riebel. Davey tossed a peppermint towards the press box and sauntered to the stand.
Carol, did you ID this radio DJ?
No. Honestly, I thought the cheerleading thing was a scam.
Interesting. Did you know Henry Newell?
Nope.
Thank you, sweetheart. We're done, Your Honor.
For the remainder of the day, Pam Newell rehashed how she and her husband had found Christy, then Dr. Nobuhisa Baba testified how he did not find any evidence that Christy had been raped, something that they were accusing Jack of. Things got interesting the following day when Henry testified.
See that blue uniform, boys? Make sure your articles talk about Henry's time at the Chillicothe Correctional Institute. He burned his home down last year for insurance money.
Mr. Riebel, please stop fraternizing with the press.
Sorry, Your Honor.
Mr. Newell, could you walk us through how you found Christy?
Henry recited his story before the defense made their cross.
What were you wearing that day?
Cut off jeans, and I left my shoes in the car.
Facial hair?
Yep. Hadn't shaved in a few days.
So, you looked like the killer you described to the police.
Oh, well,
Did you and your brother Tommy pretend to be DJs and call Carol?
No.
And did police show you Jack Carmen at Graceland before taking you downtown for his lineup?
No.
Your wife said different, but okay.
The testimony damaged Henry as a witness, and he was soon excused. Over the next couple of days, the community was growing more and more interested in the trial, and the courtroom filled up. It was still anyone's game until the fifth day when the defense entered grinning.
You tell your papers we found a gem of a witness, fellas.
In walked Pam's now 12-year-old son, Bobby.
Hey, kiddo, let's talk about the day Christy Mullins died, okay?
Sure. Junior chased the kids playing with firecrackers off, but he didn't come back for half an hour. When he did, he didn't have any shoes or shirt on, and scratches covered his whole body. He talked with Mom in the other room for a while. Then Mom said we were going to Graceland.
What were you buying?
Nothing. We went into the woods, and Mom said she found Junior's sandals. We kept walking, and Junior suddenly got angry and said, "It isn't here." So we kept on, and Mom said to stop. We did while her and Junior went behind a tree for 5 minutes. Mom came back crying because the body was there. We went to Wilco's to call the police. Mom said not to tell anyone.
Did you?
I told my daddy as soon as Mom dropped me off with him. And I told you and Mr. O'Brien because that's the law.
It sure is, Bobby. Witness is yours, Mr. O'Brien.
You kept that secret for a while. 2 years is a long time.
Well, the police didn't really ask me much, so I didn't tell them.
I understand your mom called last night to see if you told Mr. Mullins or the lawyers what you saw. What did you say?
I told her no.
So you lied to your mom?
Yeah, because my father told me not to talk to anyone about this unless he told me to. Junior's a real mean man, Mr. O'Brien. He might have killed me next if I told.
The courtroom was literally overflowing the following Monday as the defense brought in their final witness.
Mr. Alvin Caudill, you and Henry were drinking buddies?
We sure were. Thank God he didn't try to pin this murder on me. Jack was also one of his drinking buddies. He knew that retard couldn't defend himself.
All right. Let's hold off on that for a second. What did he tell you at the bar in 1976?
He said he killed her, but he didn't mean it. He said he only meant to knock her out.
Thank you, gentlemen. Let's get the final statements in and send the jury on their way.
4.5 hours later, the jury returned with their verdict.
Not guilty.
It was a victory for Jack Carmen, who had more or less disappeared from everyone's minds during the last few days of the trial, as he had stared down at the floor in silence. Now, he was all smiles as people hugged and congratulated him. Graham LeSturgeon, the director of the Volunteers of America, gave him the biggest hug.
Well, Jack, you're a free guy again. How'd you like to come and live with me and the wife until we find you a permanent home?
Yeah!
Jack! Hey, Jack! Smile! This is gonna be front page news!
Every reporter was eager to get a word with the now free man, and he willingly spoke on and on until the bailiff tapped him on the shoulder.
Come on, Jack. Say Merry Christmas to these folks, and let's go.
Merry Christmas!
Merry Christmas!
Merry Christmas!
Merry Christmas!
Merry Christmas!
Unending war against all criminals.
Hello?
Oh, John! I wasn't expecting to reach you. Just finished your latest book. I couldn't put it down. Think you'll win the Greatest Author of 2013 award?
I don't think that's a real award.
We'll make it one. But pal, I gotta know, what's your next bestseller?
Oh, I don't know. I want to find another story, one that most people have forgotten about. Wait. James, this is probably a long shot, but do you still have anything about that Christy Mullins girl?
Oh boy, do I. I'm a pack rat. I kept all my notes from the lantern. Have all my contacts numbers, too. They're probably dead or moved now, but I can send you what I have. You gonna finally solve her case?
Yeah. I remember her parents were looking at that Henry Mullins guy.
I think he meant Henry Newell.
Whatever happened to that? Police kind of fell silent.
Of course they did. Hopefully you'll change their minds like my article did. I got Jack free, you get Henry behind bars. Good luck.
A man named John Aller received all of James Yavorchik's notes from his days as a student reporter. I guess sometimes being a hoarder does pay off.
Hi, is this Pam Brown?
Yeah, who's this?
My name's John Oller. I'm writing a book about Christy Mullins, and I think your Uncle Henry was a pretty big part of it.
Uncle Junior recently passed from cancer. I don't want to talk.
Pam Brown threw her phone across the room as if it would bite her. Then tears welled up in her eyes.
Junior's dead, sweetie. He can't hurt you now. You know what he did. I know what he did. We all know what he did. Maybe it's time we went to the police. Obviously, people are interested in this story.
Yeah, but it freaked me out the other night when 10TV ran that story about the cops looking into it. If they knew what we knew, they could close the case. But oh, seeing how upset that girl's sisters were, it kills me.
Maybe we'll feel better if we tell.
Decades had passed since Christy Mullins' death when John Oller's ebook, An All-American Murder, was published in 2014. Norman Mullins had been determined to find out who really killed his daughter before he had lost a battle with cancer in 2006. Now with this ebook re-examining the case, the public's interest was renewed. As they always say, someone usually knows something about what happened, but for one reason or another, they're too afraid to say. In this case, it was Henry Newell's niece, Pam Brown. She called officers to tell them what she knew and agreed to a lie detector test in May 2014.
Uncle J.R. was a real scary man. I loved him, but he was evil.
What did he tell you?
Remember when you was little and you heard about the Christy Mullins girl? What I'm gonna tell you might shock you. And then point blank said he killed her.
Why?
He drove up to Graceland and saw her sitting on the guardrail. And he decided to talk to her, and eventually he led her into the woods. He tried to rape her, but she fought back. He was a strong guy, so he tied up her wrists, and she started screaming. And she didn't stop, so he picked up a board and beat her face in. He said if I ever told anyone what he told me, he'd kill me. I came home from school and learned he bought me a car.
To buy your silence?
Yeah. But he didn't need to. I was scared to cross him. He raped a girl in my car once and killed a woman in Alabama. I don't think he once regretted killing Christy. Lord, I just wish the Mullins can forgive me for not saying anything. I was just a 16-year-old kid, scared for my life.
On November 6th, 2015, Columbus police closed the case of Christy Mullins. Sergeant Eric Pilia nervously stood before the news cameras.
The Columbus Division of Police wishes to formally and publicly offer an apology to the family and close friends of Christy Mullins for the lack of action taken in pursuit of Henry Newell as a suspect by investigators 40 years ago and any hardship that may have resulted from those actions.
Though it is satisfying to close the chapter of a long unsolved murder, this one just didn't feel right. Henry Newell would never go to trial nor spend time in prison for the murder of Christy Mullins, since he passed away before police officially called him the killer. And this genuinely shocks me too after researching this crime, since literally everything pointed to him during the trial. The Mullins did pursue justice for a time after Jack Carmen was released, but for one reason or another, the case quietly fell to the wayside until a writer started to get curious. Not to make this about me, but the story does give me hope that my own writing can one day renew interest in an unsolved crime and maybe bring justice to a victim's family. That would be an episode truly worthy of the Blue Ribbon Prize at the fair. Affair to Remember was written and narrated by me, Skylar Fastenal, and executive produced by Daniel Jones. Voice talent was provided by Taylor Shirdy, Daniel Jones, Jordan Catcher, Tamara Perry, Jeremy Staple, Jeanette Zosh, and Gabriel Rivers. Our theme music was performed by Tracy Zales, editing and sound design by Brian Campbell, and cover artwork by Catherine Fastenau. We hope you enjoyed today's chapter and would like to invite you to leave a 5-star review wherever you're listening. You can also check out our Facebook, TikTok, Instagram, and Twitter accounts at The Original Dead Time Stories to learn more about the crime that we just didn't have time to cover today. True fans of our show will join our Patreon at patreon.com/OGDeadTime for exclusive gifts, ad-free content, and videos where you can sit down with me and learn more about today's episode. A ginormous thank you to those who have already subscribed. Our road trip across America continues in 1 week, and trust me when I say we have something deep getting fried up for ya. Until then, stay safe out there. I don't want you to become the next chapter's topic on The Original Dead Time Stories.